For too long, the fertility market has been bewildering, overwhelming, and frankly, I think has downright ignored the needs and difficult experiences of the people they're supposed to be serving. Ovum has made it their mission to change this completely. Now, I am extremely choosy about who I promote on this podcast because I'm very protective of my listeners and audience, which is why you've probably only ever heard one spoken ad like this before. So it's with complete confidence, excitement, and pride that I can share this amazing company with you. Ovum care about you, truly. From creating products to support conception and fertility that are designed by doctors and backed by the latest science without cutting any corners, from adding access to meditations I've personally written and recorded inside their pregnancy test boxes, Ovum is founded by individuals who've navigated infertility themselves. I really couldn't be more proud to partner with them and tell you about them. Ovum is driven by the belief that everyone who is trying to conceive deserves better, and I am 100% behind this ethos. So head over to startwithovum.com and use code LIFERAFT10 for 10% off their tests and supplements.
You can learn and you can take on board what other people say, but ultimately you have to stay true to yourself. And I think that's what I think I struggle with the most. It's not being a people pleaser all the time. It's just knowing that what you're doing is for a reason and staying on track.
Hello and welcome to Fertility Life Raft with me, Alice Rose. This podcast is for you if you find yourself longing for a baby and then finding that the path to bringing them home is not easy. It's for you if you've had enough of feeling like you're losing sight of yourself, because that's how I felt too. And it's also for you if you're supporting someone going through this and want to understand a little bit more. So, welcome to a totally safe space. Honest conversation, real and raw stories shared, and a little bit of topical stuff too, because I really believe it's not all down to you to get through this. The world needs to catch up too. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's such an honour and a privilege to have you here back with me, Series 3, Episode 2, with the amazing Amber Itzo. I feel like I've met Amber in real life, but I actually haven't, which is weird to me because I just, yeah, with all connections you make online that you kind of follow and support, and I'm sort of, I feel like I really want to wave my flag for Amber because she's doing so much and she's got so much you know, drive to change stuff and changing the narrative, disrupting what, you know, we've been presented in our little fertility world as this is what happens. And Amber's gone, no, thank you. No, that's not good enough. So we speak about her amazing Fight for IVF campaign, which is making genuine change. Like, it's just incredible what she's doing. So, you know, hats off to Amber for all of her work. And for doing this in real time as well. Amber's going through her own fertility journey, which she shares with us in this episode. And we talk about working through the frustration of being told, you know, you're young, you've got plenty of time and it'll be fine. And what that feels like to hear that on the other side of hearing those words. And we also have a really good chat about learning how to stay in your own lane while still being very much part of this supportive community, and how important it is that we try not to compare what we're experiencing with anyone else, any other stories we hear or anyone else we see on Instagram, or indeed like people that are, you know, having children in our lives or not having children in our lives. So yeah, how we can balance that, being part of the community while at the same time, you know, not comparing what we're experiencing and just staying true to what's happening for us. I hope that you really love this episode. As always, let me know. Alice at thisisalicerose.com is my email address. Find me on Instagram, thisisalicerose, and do leave a rating or a review when you finish listening, or right now if you forgot to do it last time. Sending you all loads of love. Enjoy this episode and I'll see you at the end. Hi Amber, welcome to Fertility Life Raft. How are you?
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm really well. How are you?
I am really well. All the better for seeing your lovely smiley face. I love speaking to you. You're such a little ray of joy, aren't you?
Oh, I think my husband would disagree, but I'll take it.
Oh, Amber, so I really love everything you're doing.
Thank
Well,
you.
we were just speaking just now before I hit record about the fact that you do a lot at the moment. So
I do.
let's first of all, let's just hear, can we hear your story and what's led you
Yes.
to doing all of this and
Yeah.
why you're so passionate about, being in this space?
Absolutely. So my husband and I, my husband Marco, we started trying to conceive about 6.5 years ago now. And it was just kind of, I don't know, we never really planned to go down this route. Obviously, I mean, who does? But I'd come off the pill just because I didn't like it. And I think we got to a point where we were just being a bit irresponsible, I suppose. And after about a year, I was a bit like, why is this not happening? This is a bit strange. Why am I not accidentally pregnant? And then you kind of become a bit obsessed, don't you? And you go down the rabbit hole of what could be wrong with you and XYZ. And yeah, so I think a really, really long story short, I was diagnosed after about 3 years with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I was kind of fobbed off by my doctor, if you like, saying that I was really young. And it was, in fairness, my PCOS is only borderline, so it shouldn't have been enough to stop me getting pregnant after this amount of time anyway. And yeah, I just kept being told that I was young and it had happened. And you're there kind of 3 years in thinking, well, it's not. I'm supposed to be in my prime here. What's going on? And then, yeah, about 2 years, no, maybe not 2 years, maybe about a year after that, I was diagnosed with two fully blocked fallopian tubes. So I'd had a laparoscopy, and I was told that the only way we could get pregnant is through IVF. So we're now 2 fresh cycles in. We have a bit of a track record with really, really poor embryo quality. We've only ever had one viable embryo, which in itself was just rubbish. So that was never going to work. And that's kind of where we are now. So about 2.5 years ago, I started kind of blogging about the journey, if you like. I think as soon as I was diagnosed, it was, I need to talk about this. I'm somebody who tells everybody everything, which can be a bit problematic, but most of the time it's a good thing. And yeah, I was very, very vocal about it and straight away just thought, I need to share this. I need to talk about it, because if I don't, I'll drive myself insane. And I wasn't coping mentally. So it gave me that space to just kind of open up about how I felt. I very much used it as a diary. And 2 years later, I'm still very much doing that, but on a larger scale. And I've kind of made it my life in many ways. And yeah, I'm glad I have. It's definitely been a really good therapy for me, I think, more than anything.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, there's so much to ask you about in that story. And thank you, God. You're so good at kind of, condensing all of that into that amount of
Yeah. It's
thought.
taken a lot of practice. I think there's been too many occasions where I've been talking for 45 minutes and thought, this was a 30-second question.
Oh no, God, I do the same thing. But first of all, how frustrating was it for you to be told by your doctor and probably, I guess, a lot of other people, oh, you're young, it'll be fine?
Beyond words, really. I think initially you kind of, it's taken me a really, really long time to learn to advocate for myself. That is something I find really hard. I find it really hard sometimes to speak up anyway if it's not something I'm really confident in and really know a lot about. So when it came to fertility, at this point, I had no idea. And at that point, we didn't really tell anybody that we were even trying. I think, my parents didn't even know until I went for my laparoscopy, and we're 4 years in. And I think it being told that I was young, I was young. I think at this point, I was 20 when I came off the pill, so I really was young. And I think because I was so young, I almost felt there was a bit of taboo around that as well, about me being so young, and it was just me being irresponsible, or so I thought it would be perceived, and I felt from my doctor. So that was really, really hard. And I kind of allowed myself to be fobbed off for that reason, and just thinking, oh, maybe it is because I'm young, maybe it'll just happen. And in my head, I was like, right, we'll get married and then it'll work, because that's just maybe the way it's supposed to be. And you, I kind of th I think you kind of convince yourself all these reasons why it's not working. And in my head, that was it. But I did find that really hard. And I still struggle with that now, I think, because having, like I say, having been through 2 cycles of IVF and heading towards our third, I still get people saying to me, oh, you're young, you've got plenty of time. And I think, okay, biologically, yes, I do. But at the same time, do I want to be 35, 15 years into this journey and still trying? Like, the effect that has on your mental health is unbelievable. So I do find it quite frustrating. But I know that obviously things aren't meant maliciously. It's just it's an observation, I think, more than anything. Yes, I'm young, but that doesn't make it all go away kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I even find it quite annoying when people always go, yeah, but people mean well. And it's like, well, that doesn't really help me because I'm on the other end of it. So I know, of course they mean, you know, of course they mean well, or of course it's not meant maliciously. That kind of goes without saying in a way, doesn't it? But actually it's more about being conscious and aware of what the person is actually going through. And exactly as you say, like, you don't want to be going through this for 15 years. And you know that who does? So actually, however old you are, doesn't really, of course it has a bearing on lots of things. But in terms of your personal experience right now, it that doesn't make any difference. You're still been in on this journey for 6 years.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are times where I'm grateful for the fact that we found out when we did, because I think, well, it's, you know, I found out that I was infertile at 24 years old. And I think, well, had I been 34, and that, you know, you talk about the biological clock and all the rest of it, I think then, okay, I perhaps have less time to save the money and think about what we're going to do. But in the same breath, there's an age gap between me and my husband. So he's 15 years older than me. And we're kind of like, you know, he doesn't want to be that much older. And at the same time, you know, although, okay, male fertility doesn't decline, I think, as much as the female. But at the same time, I don't want to be going through this for much longer. Neither does he. So time, I think, it's subjective, really, isn't it? It's, you know, some people might want to keep saving for years and years. I want to enjoy my life. So it's trying to find that balance, I think. I think that's really important.
Yeah, let's talk about balance. Let's talk about what you have found yourself doing now, because you are offering like incredible support to the fertility community. And you, I mean, where did that drive to? I mean, first of all, let's start with your Fight for IVF campaign.
Yes.
Yeah, tell me where that came from and why you're so passionate about it.
So the Fight for IVF campaign is a campaign to end the IVF postcode lottery. So as I'm sure you're aware, obviously where you live determines how many cycles of IVF you're allowed. There are 3 CCGs in the whole of England that offer no IVF whatsoever. And it is sod's law that I live in one of them. So we haven't been entitled to any NHS funded IVF at all, which we knew when we found out I was infertile. But that was a really big blow, because I think you've gone through all of this. It's for medical reasons that I can't have children. I mean, it is for everyone, but we have had no support with that whatsoever. And so it was a case of, hello, Mrs. Itso, you're infertile, off you go. And that was it. And we were kind of just left to navigate this world all by ourselves. No idea what was going on. So I live in Cambridgeshire. So they removed it in 2017, which is also really frustrating, because had I been referred in line with the NICE guidelines, we'd have been within that time frame and qualified. But obviously they've removed it. And the amount of people, when I started talking about it, the amount of people that were getting in touch with me and telling me how much it had impacted them. And I think, you know, I know that petitions have been done in the past and so on, but obviously nothing has changed. And certain places have reinstated it. But for me, I thought, well, there's no point. One thing my dad has always said to me is, don't sit around and moan about things. If you're going to moan about it, do something to change it. And I think that just kind of stuck with me. And I got to a point where I just thought, if I don't do it, who's going to? So I did. That started, we launched that Fertility Week 2020. So that was November last year. We've got over 30,000 signatures. We've got a meeting coming up with Cambridgeshire and Peterborough CCG. It's doing a lot better than I thought it was in this amount of time. But yeah, it's something that I think is definitely needed. And I definitely think I'm angry enough to give it a good go.
Honestly, hats off, because that is, you know, everything you've just said there is so inspirational. And I love that quote, don't sit around and moan about it, get up and go and do something. And I really feel like I relate to that, because I think, you know, we do end up quite often almost feeling like a victim in our lives, and yeah. feeling just like that things are happening to us. And yeah, shit stuff happens and it is completely unfair. But if we don't actually take some ownership of that and take some responsibility, not that everyone has to go out and start a massive nationwide competition at all, but you know, there is an element of just going, okay, this is going on for me. What small step can I do to take some ownership of it? Where am I responsible in finding a way through it in a more positive and proactive way? Where do you find, because I know, you know, I speak to a lot of people and they, you know, their confidence is like really knocked by all of this stuff, and they just don't have the energy or the motivation or the belief in themselves that you just seem to have in droves. Let's talk about that.
I think it's, for me, it's a case of fake it till you make it. And I think it's always, I think it's really easy, like on Instagram and things like that, like you're talking to a screen. And to me, it's like, I feel like I'm talking to myself, and that makes it a bit easier. And I think we've had conversations before where like, I really struggle with the pushback. And if anybody disagrees with me and I'm like, oh no, what do I do now? I'm really panic about that. And I'm not very good on that front, but it has kind of forced me to be a bit more confident in myself. And I think infertility has done that in general. I think that it has kind of forced me to really get to know myself as a person, and putting myself out there in this way, I think you do kind of build a thicker skin. And so when I started the campaign, I don't think it took that long. I think it literally took about a week, and I'd had Sky News come to my house and do a report on it. And one of the questions she asked me was, why do you think that you can do this? And I was like, and I really fell at that question, because I was like, oh my God. And it just knocked me for six. And I answered it. I can't even remember how I answered it, but I remember going inside and speaking to my husband, and that was it. And my confidence had just dropped to the floor, because I was like, oh my God, what makes me think I can do this? Like, who do I think I am? And I think then I started to get this really big imposter syndrome. And it's the same. I think it's the same with everything I do in this space, that there is part of me that thinks, who do you think you are? And I don't know. And then it's kind of reinforced. And when, you know, people will send me lovely messages and they'll thank me for what I do and things like that. And that is just when I'm like, this is why I do it. This is why I do it. And sometimes I think I dream it, and I think that I've made these people up in my head, and that it's not as amazing as I think I should perhaps give myself credit for. But yeah, it's something that I struggle with every now and then. I'll have like 3 weeks where I'm like on cloud nine and I'm like, yeah, I'm smashing it. I'm doing really well. And then other days where I sit there and think, what are you doing? You're an absolute loser. And it's just one of those. But yeah, I'm definitely more confident, I think, than I was when I began. But at the same time, it's like when people I know in real life follow me and see what I'm doing, and I think, oh my God, this is like my husband's cousins listening to me on Instagram talking about my uterus and things like that. I'm like, that's where I get a bit. In real life, I'm not so confident. I think that answers the question.
Yeah. Oh my God, totally. And I think that question that she asked you, why do you think that you can do that? That's the question all of us ask ourselves in our heads before we start doing anything that pushes us out of our comfort zone, and before we start anything creative or start anything offering out something to the world. Like, you know, and that is the belief that so often will prevent people from actually offering something.
Yeah, because
they think to themselves, who am I? I 100% relate to that. You know, I took me ages to kind of get up the courage to start doing what I do. And I very often used to have that voice coming in loud and strong, like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, why should people listen to you? Like, there's like a billion other people, you know, but the second that you, as you say, like, you're more confident now than you were when you started. So and that fake it till you make it thing, actually, you know, that's your brain being very clever in overriding the kind of fight or flight thing, which is like, no, unsafe, stay quiet, stay, you know, in your box thing.
Yeah,
you are overriding that and just doing it, because your purpose, which is to fight for IVF and all of the other stuff you do, is much stronger than the thing that's trying to keep you back, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you get a lot of like, for me, definitely, I think I've gained a lot of that confidence through the people that I follow on Instagram and things like that. Like, I know Emily Clarkson, for example, I know you're a massive fan of her, and I started following her about 18 months ago. And I think there's times where she'll receive criticism, and she talks about the fact that she really struggles with that and with people that disagree with her. And I sit there and think, oh my God, it's normal. It is normal for you to feel that way, even when you're as successful as she appears to be. And I think, well, there you go. I'm not losing it. It's normal to feel this way. And you just have to kind of push through, and you can learn and you can take on board what other people say, but ultimately you have to stay true to yourself. And I think that's what I think I struggle with the most. It's not being a people pleaser all the time. It's just knowing that what you're doing is for a reason, and staying on track with that, I think.
Definitely. And even all your body language there, for people listening, not watching, it's like staying in track, you know, like using your mind, your hands there against your
body. Yeah, I talk with my hands a lot.
Yeah, but like staying in your lane. You know,
yes, that exactly.
Is, and that Lucy Sheridan talks about this, the comparison.
Oh, I love her. I love her. I've done one of her courses. She's amazing.
Yeah, me too. She's just the best. She's actually been on this podcast in the first
season. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, she's just wonderful. So thank you, Lucy. We love you. But yeah, she talks a lot about staying in your lane. And that is absolutely it. I think with anything like this, whether it's, you know, starting a campaign, starting a business, going through infertility or any difficult road to bringing home a baby, the more you can stay in your lane and be part of a community at the same time. And that's the balance, isn't it? Being able to not feel alone, but also keep focused on what is happening for you and what 100%. You need. So how do you do that, Amber? Like, what's in your life raft? What does keep you in your lane?
I think sometimes I find it really hard. I think it's, especially when you're, I mean, I'm sure you can probably relate to this, but I think sometimes when you do the work that we do, you take on everybody else's emotions as well, don't you? And I think it's really hard to then look after just yourself. And I think it's only really recently that I am starting to learn that I do need to put myself first, and I do need to take that time, whether or not that is, you know, shutting my laptop down at a certain time and reading for half an hour before I go to bed. That's my escape, because I think I can wander into a world that isn't, like watching a film I think is one thing, but for me, reading a book, because it's physically in my hands, I can't then just pick up my phone and I can just escape into a different world. So that for me is a big thing. But I think my husband for me has been a massive supporter. He is definitely a supporter, not a talker. He doesn't get involved in anything that I do social media wise, really. And I think for him, he can see the signs with me and see when I'm starting to lose myself a little bit. And he is really good at kind of reining me back and just calming me down. But I have a really good support system, and I think that really helps, that I have certain people who really cheer me on, and yet at the same time will say, right, come on, let's, you know, refocus a little bit. What are you doing? Should you really be venturing off into this when you've already got 5 million things going on this way? And that for me is so helpful. So helpful. And I think I need that. I need that encouragement. I'm that type of person anyway, where I am a bit needy and I'm a bit, tell me I'm doing good things, please. and I have that. And that for me is really, really important.
I think being, you know, you're so aware then, aren't you, of what you actually need to keep you going. And that's so key. I think I love what you said there about actually reading a book, because it's physically in your hands, stops you from kind of getting distracted by something else. Because very much like this is what I'm, you know, learning so much about with my coach training at the moment, is learning about, well, what's going to stop me from doing that and how can I overcome it? So if you know that you're the kind of person, and this is relatable to all kinds of stuff, you know, like if you're the kind of person who does end up on a Google fertility forum until 3 o'clock in the morning, like where can you make a change so that that doesn't happen? So if for you it's that, if I'm physically holding a book in my hands, that means I can get my brain into that world and it will take me there for half an hour and then I go to sleep. Like, that's what we've got to get really conscious, haven't we, about what we're letting our brains doing, letting our brains do.
Absolutely.
So just coming back into your story right now and your fertility situation as it stands. So I think you're about to go abroad, is that right?
Yeah, we're hoping September time, COVID permitting, that lovely word. So it's a case of, we were going to stay in England, but it was just, like I say, every cycle we've had has had to be a fresh cycle. We've got no embryos on ice. So for us, it was very much cost driven. That and the fact that I feel like I need a break. I think we've not had a holiday in 3 years, which is a really quite a privileged thing to say, but for us it's a bit like, oh, I just need a break now. So yeah, we were having a look and we decided to have a look at going abroad. And it just worked out so much cheaper for what we wanted and what we needed. And yeah, so we did a bit of research, found the clinic that we like, and yeah, we're hoping September. It's Greece that we're going to, so we're hoping. For me, I'm very much like, unless it's put on the green list, I'm quite happy to postpone until then. But yeah, it's just taking it a day at a time at the moment and just preparing to go whenever that is. But yeah, it's exciting, I think. Change my mind every day.
Do you? What kind of where did so some days it's exciting.
Yeah, and other days I think I'm just really nervous. I think because our past cycles have just been so disastrous. Like it hasn't just, I think the first cycle we'd had the egg collection. The fertilization rate was shocking. I didn't really respond to the medication very well, and we didn't even have anything to transfer in the end. We got to day five. I think we were literally on the train to London to have the transfer, and the embryologist rang us about 10 minutes after we got on the train and basically said, "There's no point you coming up. Sorry, there's nothing here for you." So we ended up getting off at the next stop, and I'm just stood at the train station, like, "Oh my God, what's just happened?" Because you just don't expect. I think you go into it so naively, and I think I'd actually had a consultant that I'd met about 6 months before we started IVF, and I'd kind of spoken to him about my diagnosis, about my husband's low morphology, etc., etc. And he said to me, he said, "Oh, it'll be fine, you'll do ICSI." He said, "It'll work first time." He said, "You're a clinic's wet dream," and like literally his words.
Gross.
So I'd gone home and I said to my husband, like, "Oh, I met this consultant today, and like he said that there's no reason why it wouldn't work for us, blah 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 blah." And I clung to that with everything that I had. So I did not expect the outcome that we got. You expect to at least get to transfer. And then the second time, like I say, we just had a really poor quality embryo. I'd had a massive cyst, and it was all just very disastrous, but that failed to implant. So I think there's part of me that's really anxious that the same will happen again. And I think that's one reason why we had gone abroad, because I think financially we decided that if we did it in the UK, it had to be our last egg collection. Whereas if we go abroad, we can push out another if we need to. But yeah, I think my goal this time, as much as obviously the goal is to have a baby, my realistic goal, if you like, is that we just get embryos on ice. Like that is what is important to me at the moment. So I think there's just, as much as I'm really, really excited and it's a change of clinic and it's a change of protocol, there is still that part of me that I like to think of myself as a realist, and I think I can't let myself get too positive and too, it's going to work, it's going to work. I have to have that. Okay, we can feel really positive and we can feel like we're making all the right changes, but be aware that it might not. So that's where I'm at the moment. And I think most of the time I'm really positive, but there is still part of me that thinks, just don't let yourself, don't sit there and plan the Christmas pregnancy announcement and all the rest of it. Just let yourself be aware of how you feel and deal with that as you go.
I think that's absolutely what we need to try to channel. But when we, because it sounds like you're actually very present with what you're feeling.
Takes
And
a long time.
well, you've had some practice. And it took me a while to get to that point, absolutely, because I did used to lie awake at night, like dreaming of how I would announce or how I would tell Simon if I woke up first and, did it. That never happened for us. It just didn't happen in that way. So I sort of lost hours and hours and hours, like, of my life, kind of in a future reality, which just didn't wasn't a reality. It was just a waste of my time, and it made me feel much more anxious and much sadder, really, when it didn't work. And I think that there's something to be said for being, as you say, like being real, like having that positivity and knowing that, like keeping that hope with you and having a really positive frame of mind, but also just to be really present with how you're feeling on a day-to-day basis, and being able to go, okay, I feel a bit scared today, actually. And actually to be okay with the fear and just to kind of sit with it a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I don't have days where I'm on the floor crying. Like they still exist very much. And I think you do just have to allow yourself to feel that. And I think as a result of finding out I was infertile, I went through some trauma therapy last year. And it was EMDR. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's eye movement desensitization. I don't know, it's very strange, but they tend to do it for people who have PTSD. And yeah, so my therapist at the time thought it would be great for me to try it. And I did that. And she kind of really opened my eyes to A, why I feel the way I feel and things that have happened in my life that have contributed to the way that I'm dealing with my infertility. But she also said to me, you know, you don't have to accept the situation that you're in. You don't have to accept it, but you should resign to it and you should allow yourself to feel that and go through the motions and understand that the way you're feeling is valid. And that really helped me, I think, because I'm not accepting of the fact I'm infertile. I don't accept it, but I have resigned to it. And I understand that this is the situation I'm in. And all I can do is ride the wave. And I think it's really important to feel those emotions. And when I am having days, in fact, not even that long ago, about a week and a half ago, I had 3 weeks where I was not in a good place at all. But I knew that it was part of the process and I knew that I would come back out of that. And I had to allow myself to feel those emotions and get it all out and cry and stomp my feet and punch the mattress and do everything that I needed to do to get that out. But it's part of the process. And I think I have to now, I'm very aware of that now. And I try and just allow myself to feel it. And I say it to other people. People will message me and say, you know, I'm having a really hard day. How do you cope? And I say to them, sometimes I don't. Like, it is, you just have to allow yourself to have that day. But when you wake up tomorrow, try and wake up and just, you can't just feel differently, but allow yourself to feel it today and hope that tomorrow's a better day. You know, you can't force yourself to just get out of it. And I think for me, that's been really important, really, really important to just allow myself to understand that this is normal and you're not going to be positive. Nobody is positive every day of their lives. And if they are, they're a liar. Like, I think it's the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not possible. And if you were, that's why I have a problem with the idea of like staying positive. To me, yeah, positivity is stomping your feet and crying and raging. Like, mm-hmm, that is so positive because that means that you're not fighting what's coming up. You are resigned to it. You're surrendering, yeah, to it. And you're right. So actually, it's really interesting that you say, I don't accept it, but I'm resigned to it, because actually I do talk about finding acceptance in your journey. Mm-hmm. But I think, as you say, like, language is really important. And if the word acceptance just doesn't resonate with you, like, finding the one that does,
yeah,
is so helpful, because it depends where your own mindset is, you know. And if the idea of resigning yourself to the, because I guess in a way, sometimes it can sound like if you're accepting the situation, it means that you're not going to do anything about it. It means, yes, that you're, you know, you're like, all right, fine, well, this is happening, there we go. Whereas to me, that doesn't mean that to me, actually. It means that I accept where I am right now. But so it's all about language and making sure you're using, yeah, the right language for yourself. And I love that, like, so the idea of resigning yourself to the fact that actually you feel really angry today, or you feel, mm-hmm, really like you can't get off the floor today, is so positive, I believe. And I, yeah, think that by reframing what positivity actually even means to you, that's how you stay positive, is by, yeah, just being with whatever comes up and riding that wave.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, I mean, I agree with what you said wholeheartedly. I think for me, when I think about accepting my situation, I don't want to accept the fact I'm infertile. I don't want that to be my story. That's not my beginning and my end. But I resigned to the fact that this is the situation that I'm in right now. And I resigned to the fact that my path to parenthood is not going to be easy. It hasn't been an easy ride. And I don't anticipate that it's going to be easy from here on in. I accept that it's the situation I'm in, but I don't accept that it's what I am, if that,
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So it's about creating some distance between the, the diagnosis of infertility and, mm-hmm, who you are.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, because that's where we fall down a lot, is because we get so caught up in the fact that we are infertile. I'm doing quotation marks for those listening, not watching. That it starts to kind of permeate like everything about us, so that we begin to live our lives, you know, as people who can't have children easily. And that affects absolutely everything. Whereas if you're able to create some distance between the fact that, yes, you have infertility and that infertility is a part of your life, but that you, Amber, are separate from that, and Amber, yeah, is able to do all this amazing stuff and like create incredible change and launch a business as well as, yeah, doing a 9-to-5 role and like have an amazing house. And, you know, there's so much that you're able to offer and give to the world because you have created this distance between you and the infertility. And I think that's, yeah, really inspirational.
Thank you. I think it's a really hard thing to do. And I think it definitely takes time, because I think you do become it somewhat. Like I most definitely have, and I have allowed it to become my life, and not just, I think, not just personally. Of course it has become my life because it dominates everything I do day in, day out. And I would be lying if I said I didn't think about it from the second I woke up to the second I went to sleep. But I have somewhat made it my life by doing the campaign, by launching my business, by doing what I do. I have made it my life in so many ways. But for me, it's now differentiating between my actual life and what makes me happy and what I do, and letting it define me and letting it be all that I am. And from a professional perspective, if you like it, this is the way I'm hoping my life goes now. And it's, I'm obviously taking the steps to do that, but it isn't all that I am. I am a wife, I am a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm everything else before I'm an infertile person. And I think it's really important to try and remember that and try and keep in touch with who you are outside of that. And it's taken me a really, really long time, but I'm getting there now. And I do, I think it's so important that you try to do that.
Well, if we don't, it's actually really hard to make decisions that might bring you closer to parenthood anyway, because I think when, you know, if you're trying to make a decision about a clinic, or if you're trying to manage pregnancy announcements or whatever it is, if you're not really connected to who you are and who, what brings you light and like sparks you up, if you're not feeling any of that, it's much, much easier to kind of get buried underneath the weight of everything that's happening and making decisions and coping with the announcements and the triggers around you everywhere. And I just see it all the time that people, you know, and that's why people, again, quotation marks, lose themselves. Yes. You know, because of course it's so easy to lose yourself when you're not connected to yourself. You need to like pull yourself up from the wreckage and you know, and give yourself like all the stuff that you need in order to kind of really to live your life in a positive way and get on your life raft and ride the waves.
Absolutely. And I do think it's quite easy to lose yourself. I think especially because there's so many, or I find anyway, that sometimes Instagram is very, there's so many rules about what you should be doing when you're trying to conceive and what you should be doing going into IVF. And I'm someone who loves nothing more than going and sitting in a beer garden with my friends with a very large glass of Pinot and drinking enough to drown a baby hippo. And I think that's something I've always done. And I know that I can't continue to do that all the time, but I think you can't, for me anyway, you choose what works for you and you choose what parts of your life you're going to change, what parts you're going to give to the situation you're in and which parts you are going to hold on to just for you. And so for me, not doing that and going completely sober was never an option for me. It's never, ever been an option. But you make the changes that you want to make in line with your life. So no, I won't go out and drink enough to drown a baby hippo, but I will go out and have one glass of wine every now and again, kind of thing. Like it's drawing that line, isn't it, and understanding what makes you happy and what you're prepared to hand over to the situation that you're in.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely having some discernment around where you're gonna sacrifice stuff for this journey and where you actually really just need. I was the same. I was like, I need a glass of wine occasionally. I just need that.
I realized that made me sound like some kind of raging alcoholic. Not quite the case at all, but you know, when the opportunity presents
absolutely.
The world's opening up again, give me strength.
How have you got through how did you get through last year, COVID and pandemic stuff?
I don't really know. By a thread, I think. But no, I think in all honesty we had so much going on anyway, and I think our cycle it failed. I think I tested about 3 or 4 days into the first lockdown. And in all honesty, I saw it as a blessing because I didn't have to see anyone. I couldn't see anyone. And so all my communication with people was by text or by call. And if I didn't want to talk about it, I could put my phone away or I could just decline the call and send a text later and say, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't have my phone on me. I was ignoring you. But I think when you weren't in that environment and we'd go see family, et cetera, you can't escape it. And if somebody mentions it, I find it really hard to sit there and go, I don't really want to talk about it. And I will talk about it because it's the type of person I am. But I had so much more control about how I dealt with it, which was a really, really helpful thing for me. And then, like I say, in about the June, I decided that I was going to launch the campaign and I decided that I was going to do that fertility week. So I had 4 months really to completely focus on that and nothing else. And we did the garden up and all the rest of it. And then in the November, I also launched my business. and started doing all the work for that. So my life has been so consumed by other things that, in all honesty, while the last year has been hard for so many different reasons, I've been really lucky and I've been working the whole way through. And the hardest bit for us has been my husband not being able to work because he's a hairdresser. But other than that, I think it's given me that time to be able to invest myself into the campaign, my business, et cetera, et cetera. So I have kind of taken it as a positive somewhat, because I've been able to do all these amazing things and at least, you know, get the momentum behind it a little bit. So it's been difficult, but we knew we were having a break from treatment anyway. So it kind of gave me that time to find myself a lot more. So yeah, in some ways I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah,
I've just hugging my nan.
Oh, when are you seeing her?
I saw her yesterday. I booked the day off, and as soon as they said on the telly, as of Monday, you can hug her, I was like, right, grandma, come on, my first legal hug. Let's get it.
What lesson would you say you're going to take with you from 2020?
That I'm a lot more patient and a lot more resilient than I thought I was. And I honestly thought when we went into the second lockdown, I was very much like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I think I have always really struggled to believe in myself and really push myself and do everything I need to do. Whereas actually I've really learned how capable I am and how, if I put my mind to something, my God, I'll do it. And I won't just do it a little bit. I don't do things by halves. I think I've learned a few lessons, but it's, you know, I've learned not to push myself too far, but also know that I am really capable of doing what I want to do. So it's definitely given me a lot more drive, a lot more motivation, which isn't a bad thing by any stretch.
No, it's amazing. It's incredible. Let's talk just about your business. So Innovation Fertility offers incredible support. Tell me a bit more about it.
I launched that in November. I don't even know why, in all honesty. I think it just came to me. I was just talking to my husband one day, and like I said to you earlier, I'm sick of working for other people. And I think for me, it was about creating a space that I wish I'd had when I was first diagnosed. And my mental health 6 months after I was diagnosed was scary. And it was a space that I never, ever, ever want to go back to. And it was just, it was horrible. The worst 6 months of my life by a long shot. And I really struggled to find a space that met all of my needs and gave me everything that I needed. So I thought, right, well, do it yourself then. Initially it just kind of started as it offered the free support groups, and it was just going to be a bit of a space where people could do that. And eventually I thought, no, I want to expand this a bit more. So obviously I've started the memberships with it. It was somewhere where I could put my heart and soul into something where I thought this is needed and there's space for it. And so just do it, just create the space that you wanted. So I've done that. There's a lot of work to be done, but so far I'm really happy with the way that it's going and the things that it offers. I'm sure you're the same. I think my brain runs away with me at times and I have all these big, amazing plans, and it's getting there. I think the motivation for it is just 100%. And I want that to be my life now. Like, that is where I want to go. With any luck, I'll get there.
I think what's really interesting about you is that you are like a natural when it comes to visualization, whether you know that resonates with you or not, that word visualization. Like, you have a very strong vision for what you want your life to look like and where you want it to go. And that is a massively powerful tool when it comes to dealing with anything, really. But when you're in the thick of fertility stuff, sometimes we're not able, because we're just so in the, you know, you can't see the wood for the trees. It's very hard to have that vision of actually being able to imagine what your life might be like without feeling like you're feeling in that very moment. So if you can kind of practice that skill that you have kind of very naturally, that skill of kind of like, this is what I want, like this is what I want, you know, whether that's, you know, and I find, you know, we get into kind of gray areas here when it comes to talking about visualization and manifestation, because I think that can crop up like a big can of worms, and we're not going to get into it on this podcast. But when it comes to just, you know, just being quite gentle about your visualization in terms of, actually, I just want to feel more relaxed, or I want to feel more like me again, you know, and having a real clear, like a very clear vision of a future where you are feeling much more you again, mm-hmm. helps you to take the steps towards it. Like, that's a just, you know. Hello.
Sorry about that. I think the postman came.
No, he gets it. He's just agreeing with me. He's like, yeah. So I love that that's kind of just something that you naturally have and naturally do anyway. And it's clearly working for you, because the things that you want to create are being created. And that's like a real, you know, act of service to the world. And what you're giving out is such a, you know, powerful and light filled and wonderful. So thank you for your gift, Amber. I've gone super cheesy.
I think so. It's one of those things that I think, you know, I have to kind of have that mentality, in the sense that all right, Bruce, we get it, you're here. I kind of have to have that vision in my head. And if I don't have a straightforward vision of this is how it's going to be, I have to have a plan B or a plan C. And so I have to envision that for me to feel like I can do it. Sometimes it's really problematic. You know, my husband moans at me all the time, because it's almost like I'm never happy. Like, I've always got to have the next thing. And the next thing is always in my head. And before I've even achieved A, I'm thinking of JKL, like I'm way down the line, which can be problematic. But I think most of the time it's what keeps me on track, because I think this is what I want and this is what I'm going to do to get there. I'm just a bit impatient with it, and I'm always wanting that next thing and really kicking my feet, like, come on, let's go. And if my life isn't going at 100 miles an hour, then I'm not happy unless I'm stressed, basically. But you know, it is what it is. It gets me there somehow, slowly but surely.
I think it's and that's a process as well, isn't it? Kind of learning, you know, going a little bit off into I think this is so relevant. I think this is so, so relevant to fertility stuff, because it's understanding that, like, filling up your time and creating stuff is a really powerful way, as you say, to stay in your lane, to stay on track, to keep focused on what keeps you going. That's really important. And then there's the other side, where it's like, also, when we slow down and when we listen and when we get really a bit still with what is actually coming up, sometimes that's the most powerful, like, messaging, if you like, of all, like, wherever you believe that's coming from, whether it's in your mind or your heart or wherever, it's like that's like a learned skill, I think. It's definitely something that I'm learning all the time. Like, I'm you know, I think we said before, we've got quite similar personalities. We're quite similar in terms of, like, what we want to do, and, like, you know, have a lot of energy to kind of get stuff made and created and done. But something that I've just massively learned over the last few years of just being in this space of, like, taking some time for myself and taking and putting, as you were saying before, like, that well-being piece, and, like, understanding that how vital that is in terms of making your whole, like, brain and body, like, just slow down just for a second, and, you know, and the result of that. Anyway, that's going down another route. But Amber, I'm going to thank you and ask you to share where people can find you and your business, and how can they support the Fight for IVF campaign as well.
So they can find me on Instagram at just amber.itzo, which is IZZO, very strange name, like pizza, but with an A and not a P. But yeah, so at amber.itzo, and then Innovation Fertility, again, on Instagram is just Innovation Fertility, or innovationfertility.com. And then the Fight for IVF campaign, again, is just Fight for IVF on Instagram. But that, all the information on that can be found on my website, which is just amberitzo.com. But it's all there.
go and find it. And how can people, where is, so the Fight for IVF campaign continues, and that's just going to continue to go, and you're meeting with people, CCGs, and is it open for signatures at the moment, or is it
it's all there. It's on there's a link in my bio and on the Fight for IVF page, but yeah, it's still open to signatures. It will continue, you know, as long as it needs to. But yeah, we've got a meeting with Cambridgeshire and Peterborough CCG on, I believe, the 1st of June, unless they postpone it again. But we'll see. Hopefully they won't. So yeah, 1st of June, and then we'll take it from there. But yeah, at the moment, we're just kind of tackling the places that have no access whatsoever, and then we are tackling all the inequalities as we go. So yeah, it's we're scratching the surface on what I anticipate to be a very, very, very deep rabbit hole. But off we go, and I'm there ready to go, like little Alice in Wonderland.
She's doing her thing. Amazing. It's just incredible. Thank you so much, Amber.
Thank for everything you do. Me.
Yeah, for being here and for sharing everything. You're just incredible. And we so love much. You. And yeah, please go and follow Amber and support everything she's doing. It's just really wonderful. Thank you so much. What an amazing woman Amber is. Thank you so much, Amber, for your time. Do go and find her on Instagram. Go and look at her website. Do have a look at the Fight for IVF petition. Such important and valuable work. So thank you, Amber. We are at the end of episode 2. So I really hope you loved that. Do let me know, as always. If you're having a difficult day today, have you had a look at my website and the resources that are there? This is alicerose.com. I have short meditations, I have little mini mindset courses, and I also have my bigger course and my membership. So do keep an eye out, subscribe to my emails so that you know when Reclaim, my 6-week course, is open for enrollment. It would be my honor and privilege to support you in radically transforming your life even as you go through this. And I really hope that these conversations that we're going to have in this podcast help to bring you to different perceptions and see about hearing other stories and what that can do for you when it comes to, you know, looking at new ways we can approach what we're going through and how we can manage our lives in a more proactive and positive way. Sending out all of the love, all of the compassion and all of the empathy as always. And as I probably will say every time, do come and be a part of this community, even if you just want to be anonymous and just kind of lurk. That's all good too. Just come and find me on Instagram, drop me a line, and please do rate or review the podcast, because that is just the best thing that I can see. little cheeky 5-star rating would make my day. So thank you again for listening, for being here, for being part of this, you know, two-way conversation, as I am gonna sound like a broken record saying that, but I really love hearing from you. So let me know what you think, let me know what you want to hear on this podcast, and I will see you next time. Take care.